Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, November 4th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's listening today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional state into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been gifted. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one and yesterday's show in which people have been stepped through the worksheet process. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. By listening to those audio files over and over again, you can have a tutorial that will help you become proficient at that use of that tool. And we hope people do that soon and often because it leads to comments and questions, commentaries, testimonials. And if you have any of those things to share with us, give us a call. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And when you call that number and press 1, it puts a little question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. Today is Thursday, and it's the 308th day of the year, and we're doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. That means today's lesson is lesson 308. It simply reads, this instant is the only time there is. The commentary reads, I have conceived of time in such a way that I defeat my aim. If I elect to reach past time to timelessness, I must change my perception of what time is for. Today's purpose cannot be to keep the past and the future as one. The only interval in which I can be saved from time is now, in this present moment. For in this instance, forgiveness has come to set me free. And what they mean by forgiveness in this work is true perception, the end of illusions, the end of any perception driven by hostility or fear. The only interval in which I can be saved from time is now, for in this instance, clear perception has come to set me free. The birth of the Christ mind is now, without a past or a future. This Christ mind is ours to give a blessing to the world, restoring it to timelessness and love. Love is ever-present. It is ever-present in the here and now. Thanks for this instant, Creator. It is now I am redeemed. This instant is the time you have appointed for your offspring's release and for the salvation of the world within your offspring. And Pam Grout's Course in Miracles experiment, Lesson 308, is titled, New and Different Time Zone, Why I Refuse to be Bullied by Time. She quotes Kelly Sullivan Ruta as saying, forget the to-do list, create a to-be list. Pam writes, here in the United States, we practice a ridiculous ritual called daylight savings time. If nothing else, tinkering with our clocks is a potent reminder that time is a construct we made up and a construct we can change. As Albert Einstein used to say, time is but an illusion, albeit a persistent one. So here's my proposal. Let's rewrite the construct of time as a prison, which is denoted by statements like, I never have enough time and there's always too much to do. And instead of a number on a clock face, let's approach time as an unlimited gift of pure presence. Let's approach time as a deep moment to just be. Congress created daylight savings time. I get to create my own personal approach to time. Do I want surface time, Ferrari go, go, go time, or do I choose deep time where all is possible, all is unlimited, all is here? Lesson 308, which says, this instant is the only time there is. This lesson reminds me the only interval of time is now. No past, no future. So in the present moment, we have about 50 minutes to take your comments, questions, answers, testimonials, soliloquies, 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and we can have a conversation. What's on your mind? On this fine Thursday morning here, noon, where many people are on the East Coast. How can we support you? What are your comments and questions about the worksheet, the process we engaged in yesterday with Ellen, the potential for raising an entirely different question, one perhaps we've never had on the show before? That could be you. 563-999-3581. Press 1 when you call that number, and we can have a conversation. I was thinking a lot about the call that we had yesterday where Susan and Ellen called and asked to work through a worksheet. And as I reviewed the call, there were some highlights that unless you work with this tool a lot, they wouldn't be obvious. They would probably be hidden benefits or highlights. And one of them was that the power of the worksheet just works. This process, which has its roots in a number of different philosophical and spiritual traditions, and it keeps coming up, it just works. When I get my conscious logical thought out of the way, when I stop spinning in my story, and when I just cancel everything that my conscious logical mind tells me needs to happen or should happen, then I open the space where some insight, intuition, a gift, a higher level of integrated perspective can enter, and then I get a chance to move forward. But as long as I keep repeating my story, as long as I keep therapizing myself, as long as I keep trying to therapize somebody else, instead of just working through the worksheet process, then I stay stuck. And another highlight of the worksheet is that most of the time, when I hold a goal for someone else, and the negative emotional energies are rising in me, almost every time that's happening, there will be a place in my life where I am not meeting the goal I'm holding for that other person. And this is a mind-boggler for most people that use this worksheet process. Because my mind is not going to show me how I'm violating the very goal that I want this other person or these people or the world as it's unfolding to fulfill. And yet, almost without fail, when I pay attention to this process and ask to be shown, I cancel everything I think I want and ask to be shown, almost without fail, I can put this lens on either in the middle of the worksheet process or after the fact and ask myself, okay, so I think I need this person to tell me the truth or to stick with me rather than abandon me or to mind their own business and not, you know, tell me how to live my own life. When I put the lens on where I ask to be shown, where in my life right now might I be violating that very goal? Might I be lying to somebody or sticking my nose in their business or abandoning someone rather than sticking with them? Almost every time I've done a worksheet and I put that lens on and ask that question, the answer is right there. It may not be hidden. I mean, it may not be hidden very deeply. It may not be right at the surface. It might take a little shifting of perspectives to see, but that is one of the hidden keys in the worksheet process that can take my work deeper. Every time I hold a goal for someone else, even if in this particular situation I may not be abandoning them, at some place in, if I'm, my goal is for this person to stop abandoning me and to stay with me and to whatever, and tell the truth, I may not be lying to that person. I may not be in the middle of leaving that person. And yet somewhere in my life, I will be actively engaged in deceit if my goal for this person is to tell the truth, or I will, if my goal for this person is to stay with me rather than abandon me, at somewhere in my life, I will be in the process of abandoning someone or something or myself. And that hidden but powerful dynamic in the worksheet process is something that can take your work to the next level. And that was just something that came to the forefront yesterday in the worksheet with Ellen, that her goal for her father was that he learn to take responsibility for his own emotional comfort or his own emotional issues, however it was worded. And that's a goal that Ellen will benefit from applying in her own life, from actually stepping into, at least analyzing the ways in which she's not meeting that goal for herself. And Ellen's not unique, and that worksheet yesterday wasn't a one-off. It's a very common pattern in the worksheet process that every time I'm holding a goal for someone that's not getting met and my emotional energy goes to a negative place, when I step back and look at it, I will probably see quite clearly how I'm violating that very goal at some time, at some place in my life, in the same time frame that I'm holding that goal for somebody else and they're not meeting it, and I'm moved by my negative response to pick up a worksheet. So, comments, questions, answers? 563-999-3581. Ellen, how are you today?
I'm fine. How are you, Dr. Tim?
Good, good.
Good. Hey, I have something to say about the worksheet I did yesterday, and then I also have maybe a question or two for you. Because something popped in as I was getting ready to go to bed last night, and I just thought it was kind of funny. You know, I didn't know, you know, obviously at the time, well, I shouldn't say obviously, at the time that, you know, when I was a child and my father was coming in and sleeping with me at night and all that, I had no idea that there was anything wrong with that. And I don't ever, you know, I never thought of it as any sort of abuse or anything like that. It wasn't until like 10 years ago, I think I mentioned yesterday, that I found out that that's what it was. And so what popped in last night was that I just find it so funny, were like a couple other reasons. I'm not even sure if that's what he was doing with me, like, because all of a sudden I remembered how badly my mother snored. And I thought, wow, he could have been coming in to sleep with me just to get away from her snoring. And then look, there was another thing that popped in. Oh, my goodness. I forget what it is now. Another reason, perfectly logical reason why he wouldn't have wanted to sleep in the same room with her. I mean, other than the fact that, you know, they obviously weren't getting along anymore. And, you know, that had never crossed my mind before, and I was wondering if that, you know, was a result of having done that worksheet. I mean, it may be that he wasn't using me in that way. I don't know. That's just what
you
I
mean,
was told by
you. Mean,
him.
You using you for emotional comfort?
Yes.
Well, you know,
I mean, how would
the
I ever
truth of it,
know that?
The truth of it won't ever be known, and,
right.
and the truth of it in an absolute sense isn't relevant. What's relevant is what did you make it mean, and what gets stirred up in your mind every time you tap into that memory, because you've downloaded the meaning that you've created from that memory, and that's what drives your experience of it. Every time the memory is activated, and your behavior every time the memory is activated.
Yeah, well, what's interesting about that is the memory of that has never really bothered me at all. But after I found out, you know, what I was told about it, I suddenly understood the pattern that I've had in love relationships and why, because you know, I read somewhere that it sets up a situation where the daughter or the son, depending on, you know, if it's a boy or a girl that this happens to, ends up being the one that ends up being with someone who's actually not available because...
Yes, that's a very common pattern.
Okay. So that definitely is my pattern, for sure. But... I guess that was my question. I don't understand how that pattern gets set up if I didn't look at it. I never looked at my father as anything other than a father to me. I mean, how does that pattern get set up like that?
Well, we don't know for sure exactly how it gets set up. There are different people that have different theories about it. There's the book It Didn't Start With You by Mark Wolin, and it talks about how all engaging in cross-generational patterns without realizing it on a regular basis. And they don't know exactly how that happens. It gets passed down energetically, that we know that, but we don't know the process. You know, how is it that a gentleman who's in his 20s has never had any problem with sleep all of a sudden develops insomnia, and there's no benefit to any of the medical interventions they try, the medications, the sleep hygiene, the CPAP machine, nothing works to give him any benefit. And then he ends up with someone like Mark Wolin, and they discover that he had an uncle who was working up in Alaska and out on a project, and his machinery broke down, and he had to try and get to safety before he froze to death, and he kept trying to, you know, stay awake and keep walking, and he was terrified to fall asleep because he knew he didn't have the proper clothes to survive in that weather, and he fell asleep and froze to death. So here's this guy in his mid-20s. He wakes up one night with no history of insomnia, and he feels really cold, and he's terrified to go back to sleep. And so for a whole stretch of years, he's not able to sleep until they do the psychological, emotional work and the family history and discover this and start dismantling the energy he inherited from his uncle. How does that happen? We don't know. But we do get these energies passed down to us. So you can hypothesize that I was working with somebody earlier in the week, and there were several cross-generational patterns that they discovered, that both of their parents did, that they didn't think there was any possibility they would do the same thing, and yet they're doing the same thing. One of them was a personal situation that the parents did, and this person was duplicating the pattern in their work life. So unless you slow down and look at it, you say, well, that doesn't really make any sense. Why would that happen? But it's the same dynamic. All right? So here, how would you define the dynamic that your dad was engaged in? Was it that he was trying to get emotional comfort from you and you just weren't available to give it to him the way he wanted because he needed an adult partner and you were, you know, a young girl? Is it that you were trying to get kind of support and affection from your dad that you should be able to get from your dad, and he just didn't have the capacity to give it to you because he was so aching for comfort and support himself? You discovered, this is it. I need to keep trying to get that approval and love, you know, healthy love from somebody who's not capable of it until I get it right. We don't know exactly what the dynamic is, but a lot of different people have theorized about it, had hypotheses about how it might happen, and tried to make it fit into a cohesive theory. But, you know, the real theory that just keeps coming up is everything is energy, and we have these patterns that we watch when we're children, and they come into us through a filter of our interpretation of it. And we don't know how that this 5 or 6 year old or 7 year old child comes up with this interpretation of things, but they do. We don't know how, you know, identical twins or a 5 year old and a 6 year old in the same family watch the same incident and come away with dramatically different interpretations of it, but it happens. And then it's the interpretation the child creates of the event that formulates their meaning, and it's that meaning that drives their reaction all through their lives every time that memory gets activated.
Hmm. So, yeah, I was just thinking, okay, so is there, like, another worksheet that I need to do around that will help dismantle that pattern for me? Because I basically just stopped even trying to, you know, have a love relationship because it always ended up the same way. You know, actually,
yeah,
what
why,
I ended up
why keep trying?
After
it's
a while,
like, you know, you bake a souffle, and every time it comes out flat. After a while, you say, I'm not going to bake any more souffles.
Yeah. I mean, I actually...
Because you read the recipe, you do everything the recipe says, and it still comes out flat, right?
Yeah.
You read the books
on
a relationship, right? You try to do your own inner work. You try to be the right kind of person in the relationship, and it doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly, there's a dynamic that's going on either between you and the other person or in the other people that you're attracted to or within yourself that keeps you attracted to them that you haven't seen yet.
Right.
And so it isn't even so much, the thought that came to me is not so much, here's another worksheet to do, but how about the targeted journaling that Michael calls a mind shifter that you can start to use to explore what is hidden in your unconscious that might come to the surface if you do enough of that exploratory work that holds a belief that you don't deserve to have a respectful, mutual, loving, mature relationship.
Wow, I felt that as soon as you said it. There it is.
Well, the dynamic is there. Some people believe that it must be there because we are creators, and if you don't have some part of you that believes you're not worthy, you would have already created that which your mind tells you you want.
And you know what's interesting is because that word available too kind of apply just to the fact, I mean, I'm just thinking now that, you know, my mother wasn't available to me. Just having the, you know, craving the love of someone who isn't available seems to be like the pattern that got set up.
Yeah. Yeah, so the mind shifter might be it's safe and healing for me to find and engage in a respectful, mutual, mature, intimate relationship.
Okay, now that doesn't mention anything about availability.
So put the word available in there to engage in that kind of a relationship with someone who's available for it.
Yeah. Because what, you know, my experience was that there was every reason to believe that the person I was dating was available, you know? And then I found out later that, well, behind my back, you know, an ex had resurfaced and was, you know, doing everything possible to try and get this person back. And I didn't even know any of that was going on. You know, my two first significant relationships, it was the exact same thing that happened. And,
right, but remember what we talked about yesterday. It's not the ex that surfaces that's the issue. It's the person you were dating who doesn't
right.
keep their commitment to you.
Yeah.
So there's something about the people that you're attracted to and connect with that they are the ones who will jump ship, who will
right.
in one way or another simply not be available.
Yeah. Well, when I was looking at that the other day, what surfaced was that it was way riskier for them, because I knew that, you know, this wasn't just like a casual relationship. It's way riskier than for them to risk just diving in deep with me than it was to go with someone that was willing to die for them. that, you know, they, that it, at some point, you know, obviously it didn't work out, and so they broke it off, but yet they knew that person better, and now this person's willing to, you know, die for them. And that it, because it seemed to me like what I saw about myself was it's more important, and I've never seen this before, more important for me to be safe than it is to be loved. And I think that's a basic survival instinct. But I think that may be like a big part of this. And because that's kind of what I saw, like that these men were reflecting back to me. Instead of risking like having the most wonderful love of their life, it was safer for them to go with the one that they knew would not leave them, because they're willing, you know, to take their life for them.
Okay, but again, all of that and $5 will get you a bag of organic carrots. Because that's just speculation. That's just the spinning and therapizing.
Well, no, so, but I mean, I saw that about myself, that I think that I believe that safety was, and, you know, is more important than, being safe is more important than being loved. And
okay,
maybe
that isn't going to move you into a place where you can have a healthy relationship. Seeing that as an intellectual level isn't going to move you into a place where you make yourself available with someone who's available and then create a healthy relationship.
Right. No, I mean, I need to be able to change that, I guess.
To find a way to access the hidden belief in you that it's not okay or not safe to be in a healthy, committed, loving, mature, mutual relationship with someone who's available for the same. There's a
mm-hmm.
part of you that feels that's not safe. That's what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Becoming aware that there is somewhere, something in me that feels that's not safe is not the same as meeting that part of me and understanding why it feels it's not safe. So it takes that experiential work. It takes that doing the worksheet process or the targeted journaling process or the energy work with somebody that completely bypasses the conscious logical mind and gives a voice to that unconscious, scared younger part of me that's holding the conclusion that it is simply not safe for me to be in a committed, mutual, intimate relationship with someone who's also available for that.
Yeah, it's so strange because, you know, when I was there, I didn't feel that at all, and it just seemed like, well, it's the other person that obviously doesn't feel that way, but I don't know. I mean, I can see how, I know I was terrified when I was younger.
Well, Ellen, here's the clue. If it happens once, it can be the other person.
Yeah, now this,
but if it happens two, three, or four times, I'm the one who was there every time.
Oh, I know.
There's something in my chooser. There's something in my internal radar that is helping me find, identify, and then choose the same kind of person.
Yeah.
And we do things for reasons.
Well, yeah. Well, I think that I'm just, you know, repeating what I experienced as a child. I mean, I didn't choose. Well, some people say we do choose our parents. But my parents weren't really available to me. And, you know, so I can see from that perspective that I would just be replaying that out because maybe I don't deserve for someone to be available to me.
Right. And some people say, we know why that happens. And then they go into this little story about how, you see, the wounded child within me needs to find somebody who's not emotionally available and win them over so I can prove my value by basically redoing the failed relationship with my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a wonderful theory. But again, that and a bunch of money will get you what you want to buy at the grocery store. It's not, that doesn't help lead to transformation unless I specifically uncover the part of me that feels that, feels it to be absolutely true. And then I can work with that part. I can have that wounded younger part of me do the worksheets and or the journaling, and then I bring it fully into conscious awareness, and there it can be worked with. There it can be altered or changed. But as long as it stays at that conscious level as a thought and a description and a set of rationalizations, nothing changes.
Oh, sure. I understand that.
So based on our conversation today, one of the most important things for you to do is that mind shifter where you say, boy, I felt that.
Oh, when you said that, about deserving.
Being willing and available. It's safe and healing for me to be available for an intimate, mutual, respectful, mature relationship.
Okay. That wasn't the one that when you said it, it's like I felt it, and it was that I just...
Well, that's a good thing, it's on tape, so you can go back.
Yeah.
there was something about, you know, just the way I said it that got you to say, well, I felt that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was about me deserving that. Because I know just from my own memory that I think I build up a lot of anger around, or hurt, and then, you know, anger around not getting what I felt I deserved. You know, there was just a lot of confusion as to what's wrong with me that, you know, I want this and no one's willing to give it to me. And everyone's accusing me of being upset, you know. So, yeah.
And the more you work on that, the more you make yourself actually available for and tap into the power that's already within you to be available for a mature, respectful, intimate relationship, and to take full responsibility for your own emotional needs getting met.
Well, I think that's the key right there.
Dad.
I mean, and that's kind of like what I have been, you know, working towards, and thinking that it's really until I can really find that the source within me of everything, you know, that all the love that I've been seeking and everything else, like to try and get into a relationship thinking that someone else is going to give me any of that, that's not going to work.
Exactly.
You know, I just kind of made the conscious decision that, okay, until I can find that within myself, I'm not even going to attempt to get into relationship with someone, because I don't want to fall back into, because I know, you know, I as independent as I've been my whole adult life, I've seen how when I would get into relationships, I would suddenly become dependent. And I didn't like that at all. And it was like I fall right back into like expecting someone to, you know, give me what I was missing as a child. So it doesn't work.
Agreed.
Yeah. Okay. So I was just curious as to, like, I just thought it was interesting how that popped in last night about my father, and I don't even know if it was true, you know, what was going on there, what I was told, and because I suddenly saw some other perfectly logical reasons why, you know, but I don't know, maybe... I just thought maybe I opened something up to allow that, another possibility to pop in.
Well, you know, as we said, it's about how the child interprets it. You know, I work with a lot of people, a lot of parents in the last 47 years, and, you know, the parent who is narcissistically wounded because he or she didn't get the unconditional love and approval and acceptance and nurturing from their parent. They didn't have it modeled for them that when they give hugs, when the parent gives hugs to the child, it's to benefit the child. It's not to comfort the adult, right? And when you have a parent who didn't have that, mm-hmm. and then they grow up and they have kids, and then the parent is in a bad mood and they keep asking the kid for a hug at the kid's bedtime. Don't you have a hug for me? And don't you know I need love? And it gets so mucked up that what could be a comfort for the child becomes a burden.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid doesn't want to give a hug to the depressed, dependent parent. The kid just wants to go to bed, or the kid wants to be comforted his or herself, and they're not getting comfort when the parent is saying, but don't you know I need love too, right after the parent was raging at the kid, for instance, or saying sarcastic, insulting things to the kid. But I'm just teasing. You know I'm teasing, right? And then half an hour later it's bedtime and the parent says, oh, but I need a hug. I need some love. I need you to care about me. Don't you love me? And whew, it's a nightmare.
Yeah, I mean that definitely wasn't my situation. My parents were very unaffectionate. You know, they're just never. I mean, I don't think. God, I don't ever remember.
Right, but look at it. If you're looking for affection from them, as most children do, and they're unaffectionate, then you put your spin on that. And we don't know exactly what spin. You'll uncover the spin as you do this kind of work, but some people put the spin on it, I don't deserve.
Mm-hmm.
Some people put the spin on it, you know, I'm bad. Some people put mm-hmm. the spin mm-hmm. on it, my parents are broken
mm-hmm.
as kids. Some people put the spin on it, hugs are bad. My parents are doing the right thing. I remember it was in the past 10 or 15 years, I had a gentleman in my office, and he was, I'm like 6'4", he's like 6'5 or 6'6", great big guy. And he was talking about how his parents were just very, very cold, very, the ethnic background was that that's just, there was no physical affection in their family. And I said, okay, well, then you would have a hard time understanding this, and this. He says, what do you mean? I said, well, you know, in the family I grew up in, we would have, you know, back rubs and back scratches and head rubs and foot massages on a regular basis. We'd have tickle parties in my parents' bed. And he got visibly uncomfortable. He said, I think I'm going to throw up. He felt that was perverted and wrong. That's how absent physical affection was in his family, that when I described an abundant, loving, you know, not sexually perverted. There was no sexual innuendo in any of it. It was just on a regular basis. We were awakened almost every morning with a back rub or a back scratch and a head rub, and we were put to bed at night with, you know, bedtime stories and a back scratch or a foot rub or on a regular basis by both my parents. And it was so antithetical to anything he grew up to with. He literally said, "I think I'm going to be sick. That sounds perverted." Because he was raised in what would effectively be a sterile environment as far as physical affection goes. The physical activity in his family was either beatings or threats of beatings. So we live with that and we learn from it. And we take different interpretations. His interpretation was that physical contact and physical affection, even non-sexual stuff, is bad and wrong, is perverted. Now, I don't know that every child in his family grew up with that interpretation, but that certainly was his.
Yeah. Now, for me, it made me crave it even more. But I never felt like I had the right to try and ask for any of that from my parents. So, you know, as soon as I was able to, I looked outside the family. And I just remember even like, you know, not that too many years ago before my mother passed on, thinking, wow, I always thought it would be the – wouldn't it be the most wonderful thing if I could just, like, lay down with my head in her lap or something like that? But I could never, ever think of asking her if I could do that. You know, it was just, it's like, wow, that's so sad that there was never any closeness like that. And, but, you know, I do believe it was definitely, like, the ethnic background. That's how it was, you know, in their household, and that's what they knew. So, you know, I never blamed him for it, but yeah, it was something I always craved.
And each of them had their own meanings for what, you know, what that would look like or what it would mean if somebody extended that kind of physical affection.
Yeah,
we all do that. We all create our own meanings for that. When there's an absence of it, we create a meaning. We make sense of it in one way or another. We either make the other person the villain, or we make ourselves the villain, or we make the activity bad or wrong.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I know I turned it against myself. Because my mantra became, there must be something wrong with me, because I couldn't understand. I couldn't understand why, you know, I was being treated in the way that I was. So I just remember, you know, well, I kind of regressed back to that at some point, and I was just sitting rock on my floor, repeating that over and over again. And so
repeating
that's...
Repeating what over and over again?
There must be something wrong with me, because I couldn't come up with any reason why all of that would be happening. So I just thought there just must be something wrong with me, like that, you know, I'm like this. I'm all upset and angry, and everyone's treating me like I absolutely should not be like this. So my only conclusion came out to be there just must be something wrong with me.
Makes good sense, except there was nothing wrong with you, and that's a false conclusion. Yeah. But to the younger self, it makes really good sense.
Right. Yeah. Yep. And so obviously there must still be, you know, That's why I didn't know if, like, the if you recommend, like, the inner child work.
Well, you know, it's all so similar that if you start doing that mind shifter we were talking about, you're going to access the part of you that believes you don't deserve it, or that there's something fundamentally wrong with it, so it's not even a good thing for you to want that kind of an intimate relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very much the same as discovering the younger part of you that believes that you don't deserve it, or there's something wrong with having an intimate relationship.
Right.
It's all going to be very similar to inner child work.
Right.
Because inner child work is simply a slight variation on uncovering the parts of your consciousness that you're afraid to look at, that we call the unconscious.
Yeah, and I think that is where that's pretty much, I think, where I stuffed my inner child.
that's where it is for all of us, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think, you know, the part of just being with, spending time with your inner child and giving them the love and the encouragement.
Well, you being the parent, giving them what your physical parent couldn't.
Exactly. That feels like it would be an important component.
It can be.
Yeah.
It is for many people.
Yeah.
And basically, at the root of it, what it is identifying and then dismantling the false beliefs we've downloaded about ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like Byron Katie says, we only suffer when we believe our negative thoughts.
Yeah.
So when I uncover the specific pattern of negative thought that is fueling this pattern of selecting people who are unavailable for intimate relationship, and when I uncover that pattern of belief and then dissect it and see that it's false, which means I no longer believe it, it loses its power to drive my behavior.
Yeah, I guess that's the part of it that, 'cause I've uncovered so many beliefs that I took on that clearly they're false, but yet there's something that's must still be holding on to them because it seems like the patterns don't release. So,
well, if you go back in this show in the first mind shifter that I offered and you said, well, I felt that, whatever it was about that combination of words, put that on your page and
yeah,
let yourself do the targeted journaling on that.
Yeah. And then from there, I take what I find and do the worksheets on it, correct?
That's certainly one thing to do. Sometimes there's just tremendous shifts that happen just from what spills out on the page as I read it over and over in a course of days or weeks, and I start to see connections and relationships between concepts and themes that I hadn't seen before. And I see how they all feed together and formulate negative beliefs that every time they get activated, they drive my behavior. And sometimes it leads me to start picking up the worksheets to say, oh, here's a thing I remember, but I never thought it was upsetting. And now every time I read it in this journaling that I just did in the mind shifter, I start crying. I say, okay, well, let me go back and do worksheets on that as though I were myself at that younger age. What was my goal? What thoughts was I using to create the negative emotion, et cetera, and just step through the worksheet process and see what it reveals.
Mm-hmm.
As Michael says, you know, all of the above. Use all the tools. Maybe you benefit from doing, you know, you do a little bit on the targeted journaling and the mind shifter tool with that statement from earlier in this show, and then you get triggered to do the three early memories of conflict, and you start seeing some combinations and connections that weren't obvious before because you've loosened up some content and helped yourself understand that it's safe for you to look at it. And then you pick up the three early memories of conflict, and you might choose some different memories of conflict before that had never come to mind when you've done that exercise before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why Michael says all of the above, right? You just keep cycling through the tools because you never know which one's going to provide an opening or an insight
right.
for you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I like the tool of once you uncover the false thought that you've been buying into, to imagine yourself in the same exact situation, but without having the thought. Which can be a little challenging at first, but once you get there, it's like, wow. And that's when you really see that it was the thought that was causing all of the pain and suffering and not the circumstances themselves.
Yep. That's powerful.
Yeah.
And it brings what most of us say we want, which is that freedom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, right now people say, in your situation, people say, well, I really want this committed, intimate relationship with someone who's available. And then they get it, and they're terrified they might lose it, and they're turning themselves inside out, upside down to try and make sure that it doesn't end. And now they're not free. Now they're living in fear.
Yeah.
And really, you know, what we want is a level of freedom that many of us have never been taught is possible.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Byron Katie talks about that so much in her work. People identify these thoughts about what they want, but really what they want is a level of freedom that they don't know exists or they don't know how to get it. So when you start questioning your thoughts, you start understanding, oh, I don't really have to believe this. I don't really have to let this drive my perception and therefore my experience of life. So I realize we're at the end of our hour. Thank you for the call and questions and for your work yesterday. I will mute you so we can do the switchover. Blessings. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tian. Appreciate you.
You're very welcome and deserving. Have a great show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Thursday, November the 4th, 2021. Call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael a moment to get dialed in, and I'll once again invite you to go to our website, which is whyagain.org, whyagain.org, and you can click on the Start Here button in the upper left corner, or you can scroll down to the bullseye in the middle of the page, both of those take you to the same place, and it's where you can get started, or where you, if you're familiar with the work, where you can get a little deeper into your own process. And we are here to support you as you go through the process. If you have questions, if you have comments, disagree with something even, we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your perspective, and we'd like to discuss it. So press 1. And welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted and honored that you're here once again. We get to play. We get to talk about this conversation has been going on for 10 years about first century Aramaic forgiveness and all of the corollary tools that are involved in the process of healing. So delighted that you're with us. And I'm going to just jump right into reading from the current chapter that we're working on, from Why Is This Happening to Me Again, a couple of paragraphs. This is Why Is This Happening to Me Again and What You Can Do About It. And we're in the chapter on working from the has-been, recognizing that if it comes from the mind, it's from the past. If there's pain and trauma in it, all you need to do is remove the pain and trauma, which means all you have to do is forgive. And that doesn't mean let somebody else off the hook because there's pain and trauma moving in you. That's where you get honest with yourself. You honor truth and you go, oh, there's pain and trauma moving in me. I have pain and trauma, rather than you cause me all this pain and trauma. If you're in any form of turmoil, there's a reason. And the reason is there's turmoil within you, whatever the form is. If you'd like to be finished with it, you got to actually put your big boy and your big girl pants on, and you got to go, huh, there's something going on inside of me, rather than pretending that. The reason you're going through this turmoil the 87th different time, and it's happened with 42 different people, is because of those 42 different people. Because it never has been, and it never will be. The only way your mind will put from your past pain and turmoil into a perceptual construct, and you will experience and feel pain and turmoil, is because it's in you. It's probably in your genes. It's been going on in your bloodline and been going on in your life. When do we grow up and go, maybe this is mine? When do we actually move into adulthood? And once you make that admission and acknowledge that it's yours, then you have the opportunity to look at things that with denial you've hidden from yourself. Remember, our definition of denial is when I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving in me, I'm in denial. When I'm in denial, in essence, when I say you made me mad, the mad that's coming from within me, I have to hide from myself. I literally dissociate from it. In other words, I make it unavailable for conscious review because I really believe it isn't mine, and I've told my mind to tell me you're not allowed to show me that this is mine. That's called dissociation. When one dissociates, whatever the energy is that they're dissociating from, they intensify its amplitude within themselves by the simple act of denial. And when that energy is intensified, we know that anything that moves inside of us sets up an energy field through resonance and will draw somebody in to play that out with us. When they are drawn in to play it out with us, they'll intensify or re-trigger that which we've dissociated from. And here's the trick of the mind. The mind uses that very dissociated content to build perception of them. It transparently injects what you've dissociated from into your brain's image of someone else. So now they magically show up with your problem attached And because your mind is showing you that it's their problem, you really believe the lie. But you know, there's always this hook. Sooner or later, you got to admit that you're the one that's feeling it. And if you're the one that's feeling it, it must be inside of you, because you can't feel anybody else's. I haven't told this story for a long time. It's one of Jeannie's favorites when I tell it, about the little old lady who, well, take a breath. I'm going to let that story go. So in any event, let's go to the has-been. For those who are following us, we're on page 139 in Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And What You Can Do About It. And just finished pointing out to Richard, the character we're talking to, that all meanings the mind gives you are from the past. All realities the mind generates, all perceptual constructs the mind generates, are from the past. If they're from the past, then you're obviously not in the present. If you're feeling a void, like where is the love, there's no love in the past. There's only replicating whatever was there. There's nothing alive or real about it. It's a reality from the past. It's generated based on past content. But the experience of love is void. We're looking to awaken the human beingness in each of us that is love, so that no matter what the mind serves us, no matter what the world serves us, our minds are fueled by love. And when we do that, we're awakening from the has-been, from the constructs of the mind. So I've just said to Richard, the mind's meanings are all from the past. The mind is known as a great deceiver. It subtly deceives us into thinking its information is the truth and what is happening now is the present. All what most people call thought is from the past. If all of the information in our brain cell structures has come from the external world, our reality structures would have been totally molded by that world. When we unconsciously lend our creative power to our past, we can become lost in recreating it. The essence of the Why Is This Happening to Me Again experience. When we awaken from the sleep induced by existing in the shadow of a dead past and a dead mind, we find that love, aliveness, joy, and delight are our birthright, and anything less is a lie. If you doubt that, just look into the eyes of a child. The only reason we live in anything less than our birthright is that we're living out of the content of the has-been, the mind. And let me be clear here that when I talk about the mind, I'm using the word the way that the culture generally uses it. The truth is, when information is firing in brain cells from the past, there's no mind involved. It's just a pure resonance function. But it's what people call the mind. The limitation of that storage device need not be the promise of the future. In other words, you know, over the years, I've had so many people, and I'm talking people who've lived decades and decades and decades of what they think is aliveness, and their bottom line is, it's like, why is all the world the same? Why are they doing this to me again? Why is this happening to me again and again and again and again? Are all people the same? The truth is, the again experience is a reflection of the content of your own mind. It's not that all people are the same. It's that your perceptual constructs are coming from the same content. And that content is massaged into looking like, oh, I'm really looking at that person. But what I'm looking at is my own unresolved, painful content formulated to look like something outside of me. And that's called projection. So when that person, when there's something we deny, hide, intensify the energy, send out a field, somebody comes in, does a behavior, then when they do that behavior resonates that dissociated content, reinforces its motion in us, and that's how we build a picture of them. The way to end that cycle by removing what's at the root of that cycle. What is the tool called with which you remove those cycles? It's called forgiveness. Forgiveness is about removing the cyclical replay of content from the mind, from this has-been, from the storage system, from the past, removing it so that we can step into a place where the actuality of what life is. I had a question from someone yesterday about truth. What is truth? Well, let's see if there are enough words big enough to describe it. No, there aren't. I just looked in the dictionary. There aren't. Oh, yeah, there'll be a dictionary definition. But let's review some of the basics here. Remember that we've talked about the Harvard research that shows that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells are firing, the max amount of data out of that 10,000, the max amount number of bits of information that go into our perceptual construct is 9. And it's been estimated that in that time frame, which is about a 25th of a second, the world of actuality perhaps contains 20 trillion bits of data. Are you ever going to comprehend, explain, or even be able to conceive of a 20 trillion bit world with a 9-bit mind? Are you ever going to figure that out? Are you ever? I mean, it's silly to even think of it. It's like an ant trying to comprehend the Taj Mahal. Here's the definition of truth that works. Truth is what is. Truth is the actuality. Truth is the 20 trillion bit world as it is. And when I make my mind available for that, it will enter and bring me into harmony with itself. If I'm fighting for my perceptual construct and you're the problem in my life and things are never going to change because you're doing it to me again, I'm not available to truth. Now I say, oh, the truth is you did this. No, that's not the truth. That's a perceptual construct. Maybe they did it, maybe they didn't. But even if they did it, it's not the truth. It's just what happened. But while I'm busy trying to figure that out, and you'll remember in our codependence to interdependence work, we point out what I call the pseudo-solutions of the non-being mind. The number one pseudo-solution is, if I could just figure this out, here's my offering. In the next billion years, you are not going to figure out actuality. But you can so honor truth that you can be available for it and its energetic patterns to enter you and restructure you. And when you come into alignment with that, you will be experiencing human life, perhaps, for the first time. So it's not something that's going to be figured out by the mind. And what we want to do is step into the truth of who we are. When we awaken from the sleep induced by existing in the shadow of a dead past and a dead mind, we find that love, aliveness, joy, and delight are our birthright. And you're never going to figure that out with your mind. So, Richard says, should we get rid of the mind, Michael? Is it useless? No, Richard, the mind in its proper place is a great servant. It's designed to be a storage device, much like a computer. It is useful for its task. The problem begins when we allow the mind to make our decisions for us, when we allow it to run our lives. And actually, I should edit that word decisions, and that is we should put in there that it appears to make choices. There's a difference between choice and decision. Decisions in the mind are automatic. They're a product of pure resonance. If I say don't think about the color of your car, your mind makes the decision. Through resonance, something pops up. And maybe what pops up is, I'm not thinking about the color of my car. I've had people say that in a workshop. So, well, if you're not thinking about the color of your car, what is it you're not thinking about? In order not to think about it, you had to think about it. That's resonance. That's decisions. And what we're looking to do is to get to the point of making choices. And choice is when you are able to reach into actuality, the 20 trillion bit world, receive something from it, bring it into your field, and let it restructure you. You've introduced something new to the mind. To one who lives in a world of drama and trauma and can conceive nothing else, it might look like receiving, oh, I could be experiencing myself as a creature of being made of love. Instead of only being quote-unquote happy, and it certainly isn't happiness, but in some sort of satisfaction mode, it's when I'm enraged and when I can attack people and when I'm winning and when I'm on top, and you know, goes with the non-being mind. Why is it millions of people don't seem to be in any form of satisfaction unless they're raging at somebody and overpowering and winning and accusing and lying? You know, it's the craziness that goes on. We need to get to the point where we make choices. And if we allow decisions to run our lives, we're in trouble. You use your computer to store and recall information when you need it. But what would you say to the person that makes no choices for themselves, the person for whom all their decisions are made by their computers? You may say to that person, wake up. There's another world out there, another level of aliveness. Your computer, quote-unquote, mind can't think. It can only spit out what's been put into it. Let go of it as your decision-making device, and make your own choices to take charge of your life. So we want to move from decision to choice, from the has-been to a state of being where the norm is that physiology is fueled by and in the continuous experience of the presence of love. And I'd offer that, you know, hand in hand with the process of forgiveness, this is a practice you want to enter into, that you literally take time. Instead of taking all your time to problem solve and work and slave and slug and suffer, as many people do, you take time each day to get quiet, to breathe, to be fully in touch with physiology, and to allow the presence of active love to move within physiology. Cultivate your awareness that love is at the root of your life. And I'm not talking about the, you know, the Western definition of this pseudo-sexual thing called love or self-sacrifice or whatever, you know, kind of crazy definitions have come out of the world. I'm talking about the fact that literally the truth, the only thing that's really true about you, is that you are created of active present love, and at any given moment you should be able to just stop, tap into your physiology, and feel presence of that love moving in you. So I'm going to invite you to breathe. And just get into a quiet space for a moment. I'm going to invite you to think of a time in your life where you truly were present to love. Might have been in our most asked question is of when you first held your newborn child or someone's newborn child. Or maybe it was when you held a kitten or a puppy. Maybe it was when you held a lover. Was when you were caught up in a connected religious experience. But take a moment and think of the peak experience in your life of the active presence of love. If you don't have one, let me share mine. I had the privilege of getting to catch both of my children as they were born into the world. And in particular, as my daughter was being born, she opened her eyes, crystal clear focus, and grinned at me. When she did, that pure presence, you know, it's actually the place that the line in the worksheet comes from that says, when I choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone. I realized that her pure presence coming into the world resonated in me something that I had forgotten long ago. And I went into the full-blown experience of present love to the point where I literally could not even think a thought. It was on a Friday afternoon. It was May 22nd, 1981. It was at 4:40 in the afternoon. Well, how do I know all that? Well, that's when my daughter was born. Why do I remember it was a Friday afternoon? Well, I lived in Atlanta, and I had a classroom in my home, and that weekend we had a class scheduled. There were people arriving, a group of about 25 or so people arriving at 7 o'clock that evening, and it was 3:40 in the afternoon that we realized that my wife was in labor, and it was 4:40 that the baby was born. It was too late. We didn't have cell phones back then. That's 40 years ago. It was too late to try to cancel the class we had. In particular, we had one fellow coming from Miami that was driving up to Atlanta. There was no way to reach him. So at 7 o'clock in the evening, with the baby on one of my arms, I went to the door and greeted people and guided them down to the classroom. And when I went to teach, I could not think a thought. My physiology was so transformed, so activated by that presence of love. Again, this is where the thought, when I choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone, that the presence of her being in her birth experience resonated in me such a powerful physiological reaction that my mind didn't even work. My has-been was gone. In fact, when I went down to teach, I actually, after just a couple of minutes, realized that I couldn't think, and then it was like direct transmission. It was like my mind and my tongue had been buttered, and it was just like direct transmission. I couldn't think a thought. I actually stopped the class after just a couple of minutes and went and got a recorder and recorded it, because my has-been wasn't working. And it's one of the most profoundly powerful, sweetest spaces I've ever been in. So if you don't have one of those experiences, take that one. Be there with me. And allow yourself to just breathe deeply and let go of thoughts of any form of fear, sadness, rage, cancel any goals for money, for control, for love in your relationships, for that person you want to do. Just let go of all those goals for a moment. And just let yourself totally attune to the presence of love in your physiology. Every cell is designed to be fueled by that love. Breathe into it. And as you breathe into it, just allow all of your awareness to be filled by that love that has always been present in your physiology, because that love is who and what you are. Pay attention to anywhere there's tension in your structure that might restrict that. Remember, we've defined life as the flow of love through a cell. Cultivate your life. Spend time. Yes, spend time forgiving and letting go of those things, processing, moving through things. But spend precious time experiencing the physiological reflection of the presence of love running every cell in your structure. If your breath is restricted, just take a deep breath and let that breath flow all the way down into your pelvis, all the way up into your cranium. Just let that move and let yourself be aware of your physiology. Breathe. If there's tension in your legs, take your awareness to your legs. Tighten them purposely, consciously tighten your legs. And then take a breath and let them go. Let that tension loose. Feel the presence of love in your legs. If there's tension in your neck, purposely, consciously tighten your neck muscles. Let your shoulders rise up as you tighten. Notice if that has an impact on your legs, your thighs, your buttocks. And if it does, take a breath and just let all that go. Cultivate the awareness of and the presence of love in and as your physiology. To live with your physiology fueled by conscious, active, present love is your birthright. It is the key to thriving, truly thriving physically, mentally, emotionally, relationally, financially. It is the key, because in that presence of love is conscious creatorship rather than replicating the has-been's content from your generations. Notice if there's any tension in your belly or your jaw. If you need to move the tension out, build your awareness of it by tightening your belly even tighter, tightening your jaw. And then by contrast, breathe and just let it totally go. There is a natural, in order for you to be alive, there is a natural flow of life in your cells. That flow is the movement of love through your cells. That is life. Let yourself be aware of it. You are alive. Therefore, there is love flowing through your cellular structure, even if your mind seems to be caught up in some form of hostility or fear. Your job, should you choose to do it, is to shift from the habit, if it's been your habit, to be in hostility and fear, to get your fulfillment from goals based in hostility or fear. It's your task to let that go and just gently cultivate the awareness of the presence of life flowing through your cellular structure, the presence of love moving in you. Allow yourself to breathe and be with that presence. And at first, it may not seem as though this is your natural state. But if you will do this dual process, one side is letting go of the energetic patterns based in any form of rage or guilt or grief or fear or hatred or vengeance or gossip or slander or viciousness, to let go of those patterns, to forgive those energetic patterns, and then to spend time with and cultivate. I mean, I'm talking about literally, you know, you're in the middle of your day at work. Oh, there's so much going on around you. I couldn't stop and focus on love here. Well, take a bathroom break. Go sit on the John. And take just 2 minutes. To become aware that there is life in you. There is love flowing through your cellular structure right now, or you would not be alive. Cultivate the awareness of that. Cultivate the intensity of that movement of love until it becomes first order of business, your natural response. Notice how soft body is. Notice the tensions. Release. Gently breathe into that presence of love that's flowing in your structure. And realize that that is what you are. And everything else in the has-been is a fraud, perpetrated past. Past attempting to pass itself off as a present moment experience. Waking up to the physiological truth that you are the presence of love in your own body, in your own energy system. And that anything else moving is a fraud. And maybe you've created much of your life out of the fraud. And now it's time to forgive it, time to let go of it, time to give it up. See the presence of love that's moving. Like, allow yourself with your inner eye. Just let your imagination go in. Your ability to image in, and allow that to look inside with your inner eye into every cell in your structure, and notice that in each cell there is a light. And as you look at trillions of cells and that light in each one of them, breathe deeply and invite that light to expand and grow. And recognize that you are light. And only light can come to you. And only light can be where you are. Recognize that it is your birthright to live in this light. Allow the light that is in each cell to expand, to fill that cell fully. And as that light expands, allow it to spill over the edges of that cell into every other cell, also expanding in light. And as that light expands and connects with the light in every other cell, see your whole structure being filled with that presence of light and of love. Allow that light and that love expanding from every cell to expand out beyond the borders of your so-called body. You are not limited to that body. Breathe deeply. Let that breath just fall out. And see that light expanding out behind, beyond the edges of your own form. And let your eye expand and see those within your community, those in close proximity to you, expanding their light beyond their forms and connect with them. Breath expands light. Breath expands love. A proper translation of the kingdom of heaven is within you is that the kingdom of expansion is within you. And so let the light that extends from your form within join with the light in every other person in your community. And know that as you choose that light, as you choose love, equivalent words, it resonates, it activates, it moves the light in every other person. You know, if I hit a middle C tuning fork on a desk and put it in front of a second middle C tuning fork, that second tuning fork has no choice but to move. If I choose love, through the same law that moves the second tuning fork, that love must move in every other field that matches it, which means it intensifies or moves the life, the movement of love in every other form that's within the field of that love that I'm extending. And just like the X-ray passes through a wall, you have to have an eighth of an inch of lead to block an X-ray. There is nothing we know of this high energy potential of active present love. There's nothing in the so-called physical world that can shut it out like the eighth of an inch of lead can shut out the X-ray. There's nothing. And so the impact of each person who cultivates their awareness of themselves as love, the presence of the movement of life, of love through their own cellular structure, intensifying it, rather than the habit of the world is, oh, get angry, puke on them, rage at them, shut, which is an instruction to shut down the flow of love in the structure. Rather than buying that, spend time each day cultivating the awareness of, the presence of, the flow of love and life through your cellular structure. You can strengthen your life force by choosing to place your energy there rather than in what the world says is important. And then, as you do that, you will be empowered to handle those energetic patterns that inevitably will come up that are less than love, because you've got that reliable connection. You've made it a habit to be in the space of your true being. And when somebody comes along and kicks you in the has-been, kicks you in the limitation, you've spent time and you've cultivated your connection to love so that it becomes first nature to go there. So just take a moment to enjoy being in that space. And know that this, first and foremost, beyond all the goals the world has put in your mind, make money, please people, do this, do whatever, this is the prime directive. Breathe deeply. When he asked Yeshua what the prime directive was, and he said, what do we have to do? What's first in functioning as a human being? He used the word rachma. And that, and rachma is that filter in the frontal lobes of the brain, that gateway that brings human life, love, into the human form. The expertise of the world is to block and shut that gateway down with hostility and fear. That's the expertise of the non-being world. And if we live in that expertise, then it becomes an habitual thing to resist the flow of love and life through your structure. That's when people think, oh, I have to go out and find somebody to love me or somebody to love. You know, you even listen to the directives in the songs, the words that come up the melody line. Don't you want somebody to love? Don't you need somebody to love? Wouldn't you love somebody to love? You'd better find somebody to love. And that's all based in a lie. Because love isn't something we do. It's what we are. Breathe into that. You don't need to find somebody to love. All you need to do is cultivate your relationship with the truth of who you are. And then you'll need to handle everything the generations in the culture have brainwashed you with that go against that. And that's the work of Yeshua. So remember, Yeshua said he had a singular purpose. It wasn't to bring you doctrine or dogma or stories about theology or beliefs from the mind of men. He said, I come to bring you life. Life is love flowing through a cell. Your being love flowing through your structure. Cultivate it. Be with it. Spend time with it. Perhaps it's more important than anything else you could do. And I'll cancel the word perhaps. And so I'll continue to breathe with you, and let's check with Jeannie. If you're out there in listener land, you have a thought to share with us, a question, something you need some support with, I'd like to share with your experience of what just happened for you. Push one. Let's have a conversation about it. Ms. Jeannie, do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up? Or anything happening in the chat room?
There are no hands up and no questions in the chat room. It's sort of along those lines, but not quite. But I had someone this morning was asking the difference between, you know, choice and decision, which you covered earlier, and will and willpower. I'll put a link in the notes today for the five smooth stones, but we've only got about 6 minutes left. Can you cover the will versus willpower?
Oh, sure. That would be easy. So willpower is that thing that says, I'm going to get this done whether you like it or not, and I'll use whatever tools I've got, rage or fear or force or, you know, I'm going to force this to happen. And that's willpower. That's the ego's cheap copy of will, which is a spiritual faculty. And will is the spiritual faculty with which you manage your mind through the conscious management of your goals. The mind has billions of goals. I don't know how we even count them, but every circumstance, every situation in life, there's a goal in the has-been, in carbon-based memory, about what I'm supposed to do with it. And that will be resonated by every experience in the world, and I will use willpower to try to make that happen. Without any conscious thought by me, I'll walk into that goal, and then that goal will drive my perceptual mind to show me a behavior with which I can make that goal occur. That's willpower. Will is a spiritual faculty. It's a faculty of this being that we are called love. And it is the place where goals are designed, where we're designed to source our goals from being through the faculty of will in order to make use of, highest use of, what's in the has-been. In order to take everything that it has that can be useful as a servant. The mind is designed to be a servant, a step stool for being. And so when I source a goal from being, that goal resonates whatever's in carbon-based memory that will help me to achieve that goal. If hostility or fear comes forward as a result of framing and setting a goal, then willpower will tend to take over and I'll try to force it. That's where forgiveness enters. Because the minute I'm moving into force, there's something based in some form of hostility or fear in me that I need to be removing. We're designed to select, frame, and set goals from being, not to just play out the goals that are in the has-been from the past that replicate the patterns of the generations. And in line with choice versus decisions, it's kind of the same thing. Decision is the non-being mind's cheap copy of choice, the same as willpower is the mind's cheap copy of will. Choice, I'm attuned to the 20 trillion bit world. I receive the highest and best it has to offer. I bring it into my mind and I bring it into expression. I'm now a conscious creator. Decision, a circumstance presents itself, something from the past comes up, boom, and this is what I'm going to do. The decision, the you know, again, don't think about the color of your car. What moves? What resonates? Two of the five smooth stones of David. Another one is intuition. Yes, the non-being mind has a cheap copy of intuition, and that's psychic. Psychic replicates the past. Intuition attunes to the actuality, the 20 trillion bit world, and whatever is fitting for my circumstances, intuition brings it in from the 20 trillion bit world. I feed it through this body-mind unit, and I bring it into life as my conscious creation. Imagination is another of the five smooth stones of David. The cheap copy that the has-been has of imagination. It's fantasy. Oh, I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to do that. But the person who lives in fantasy rarely ever puts any legs underneath it, where imagination, I image in something from the actuality, and then I go about with a commitment to do it, to bring it into expression. Then the fifth one, the five smooth stones, is to reach to the place where we have our perceptual mind controlled from being, and that's called enlightened perception. The average person lives in perceptual constructs that are just replicates of what's stored in carbon-based memory from the past. A step forward in that is to correct perception so that everything that's in carbon-based memory is at least in harmony with the truth, and at least the information that comes from the past, from the has-been, is correct about what's going on in the actual world at the moment. And then the third stage of that, where we bring in the spiritual faculty, is enlightened perception, where the gateway from the 20 trillion bit world into the 9-bit mind is and flows from that state of being. So I hope that fits with what your question is, and I know we're down to just the last seconds. Everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.